You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
My. It's called the Kevin Love Show.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Hey, Chris Manning from Locked On Cavs here, joined on this cold open by my co-host, Evan Damrell. Evan, what's going on, buddy?
Well, you know, not too much. We thought Rome was burning and Rome is Cleveland here, but it seems like everything's going to be okay, at least because they took the most Cavs approach to this press conference with new head coach John Boeheim, and Kevin Love kind of smoothed things over too. So yeah, hopefully things end up being okay. It's a long ways away until they're back to back, so something could change between now and then.
Well, so my question is, like, has Rome burned, or is this already burned and, like, now they're rebuilding Rome? Like, I think, you know, it's, you know, I'm not sure they necessarily, like, stopped the fire. It just sort of, like, it went down to the ashes and then we're, like, rebuilding. Maybe the Cavs are, like, actually Pompeii. That's probably a little too bleak.
I have heard from some people that I'm not as grumpy as our guy Carter Rodriguez yet, and we're kind of being downers. So maybe Pompeii is a bit too bleak, but
yeah, I don't need to be a nihilist here. I don't mean to be a nihilist, but this is a very, I think, will go down as a very, I think, monumental day. Thinking about the Cavs, thinking about this era of Cavs basketball. Yeah. We found out officially on Wednesday that John Boeheim is stepping down as Cavs head coach. They sent out the press release like 5:10-ish p.m. Eastern time. And then you were there and media availability about an hour or so later. J.B. Bickerstaff spoke. Basically, Kevin Love spoke. Those are the two people we've heard from so far. I don't know if we're going to hear who else we're going to hear from and stuff like that. We'll kind of see how that goes in the next couple of days. But for me, Evan, for you being there, what stood out to you? What was kind of the big takeaways from what was going on there?
Well, James Rapine and Spencer Davies and I all noticed we're kind of grouped together, and Tom Withers was sitting with us as well. Is just one, there was a lot of press there, way an abnormal amount more than normal just because of the whole coaching change. But it just kind of seemed like they're trying to carry on as business as normal. The press availability was supposed to be at 6 o'clock, but carrying the torch from John Boeheim there, and just, you know, maybe the Cavs in general didn't talk to us until about 6:45. And then, no, it's just like Kevin Love was pretty open with us about things. He said he was surprised by the news. He said he kind of heard it through back channels, like a lot of us did around Saturday, which I think was when it was starting to gain steam with a lot of us, myself included. And then he said Sunday, he's like, it's kind of bad timing for it to drop during the All-Star game, or maybe I'm just thinking that, but either way. But Love was candid, he was open, he was honest with us. He said he had a lot of respect for what Boeheim did, and the fact that he stuck around even like until everybody arrived at practice this afternoon or evening, late afternoon, early evening, and just laid it all out on the table for them and just said, like, it just isn't going to work, and I more or less, I'm sorry for kind of like failing you as a coach. And then Kevin said he just had a lot of respect. He says it takes a lot for someone to look at you man to man. And I think maybe that was genuine in the fact, because based on the report from The Athletic today about the fallout from Boeheim, a lot of people were upset with how he felt inauthentic about how he handled the Slugs versus Thugs thing. So maybe just a little bit of authenticity in him being open with his team just at the end of his time as coach, because we did learn during the Cavs press release that he is taking a new role within the organization. And from what I've gathered and heard, he is going to be more or less an advisor / consultant and helping the Cavs with his connections, quote unquote, and that's just to help widen their reach and expand things. So I think that's helpful for sure. And I think maybe that's just a way to justify giving him a little bit of left of his paycheck.
I think, to be cynical, that's where I think it probably is. It's like, okay, he can do some stuff. I don't like he's giving up like $12 million by doing this. Like this is, he's not giving up
like a million this year. So
yeah. So he's still going to get some money out of this. And he theoretically, I think a lot of people have speculated this on Twitter already. Like, you know, he might be going after like a high level college job next year. Like that could be certainly, I think, in his very near future here.
I kind of just did like a brief search. He's linked to the University of Texas, and apparently they have no qualms of letting University of Becker, University of Becker assistant go. Zips, Shaka Smart go, and so Texas is an option for Bayline, which I think would be great because it's just another Power Six conference for him to work with, so it'd be an easier transition from like saying like going from Michigan to Mid-American Conference school, just for since Chris and I both are MAC alumni. And then I also saw like Indiana as an option for him, so I think the Cavs are just kind of keeping him within arm's reach to justify giving him back a little bit of the salary that he left on the table, like you said. And maybe that is a cynical take, but I think it's also just a realistic one.
Yeah, it's practical.
It's practical because you just can't. Yeah, like when you get fired in these situations, you either get like a severance package in a normal job, or in this situation, since it's a contract, you probably negotiate the terms of how much money you're willing to like take, the team's willing to keep, blah, blah, blah. But no, Bayline was 100% walking away from this and jokingly sent you a snippet saying like it sounded like he had a gun to his head, but he said this was on his own volition. And that's the case. The team isn't obligated to honor the contract. And since he probably maybe that's what these last 3 days have been, is him playing a little bit of hardball, trying to get a little bit of this, however much, 12, 14 million he had left on the table. And according to Cranes Cleveland, from their sources, it says it's about 1.1 million that he's getting from the Cavs for the remainder of the year. So yeah, just make him earn it at this point. And even if it's in a limited advisory role, like he's not going to be involved in the day-to-day decisions or personnel changes for the Cavs anymore. And maybe he does have some type of valuable insight when it comes to collegiate scouting that could kind of help Kobe Altman and his staff. But I don't know. It was, it's just definitely been weird. I think I'm a lot more relieved and not as grumpy, just kind of knowing like I'm aware of the reality of the situation at this point with the Cavs. I know a lot of people are not the happiest about JB Bickerstaff being the team's next head coach, which, by the way, it's not interim for people who are wondering. A Cavs staffer confirmed tonight that he is the head coach. He compared
not the
to,
voice
like,
of the
Kevin
team.
Stefanski.
He's not the voice of the team. Unfortunate.
Actually, it's funny. I think Spencer Davies jokingly asked, like, is he going to be the voice of the team? And he's like, please don't ask that. Like, just straight up said that. And I'm like,
did Cavs PR take Spencer, drop him through the hole, like, on the weakest link? Like, is Spencer okay? I don't know. I need confirmation.
Well, no. Spencer's fine. Okay. His arm, because he didn't expect Kevin to talk for a solid 15 minutes, because most of the Cavs players that, at least after like practice and shoot arounds, it's like 3, 4, 5 minutes max. Like, no, but Kevin like got really deep and just kind of like went off of just about how like he's doing this and that. And he talked about how he's just like his all-star break and everything like that, but a little bit of catching up to do. But
yeah, certainly we haven't heard from
Spencer's
a lot of
okay.
These guys.
I just know. Yeah. Yeah. Spencer's okay. He said his arms are a little tired after holding his phone in place for 15 minutes. Cause he had to get all that footage for his personal feed. And I'm like, yeah, dude, I feel that. So
Spencer Davies hit the gym. Bro, get some gains. So yeah, I think there's a lot to still kind of, we'll see how it plays out. We'll see how the Cavs play Friday. You know, obviously there was some stuff that was said on 92.3 today about like Andre Drummond saying that, apparently, like not publicly, but saying that, you know, the situation is worse than the Pistons. And he like was already thinking about not coming back if, you know, if B-Laden was around or whatever. And he like went on Twitter and was like, saying that wasn't true and all this stuff. So like, there's already just sort of like some muddying of the waters and some of this stuff. You know, I found when I was like watching this back and just kind of following along, I found that Bickerstaff being like, he did generally seem surprised by this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think this was like any kind of like undermining thing here. I'll be curious to see what, mm-hmm. you know, but I will be curious to see how he handles this. You know, I will curious. Yeah. Did he say anything? I don't know if I missed it, but did he say anything to you that stuck out about like what he learned from being a head coach before? Like, was that something that came up at all?
He did just touch on the fact, it was kind of brief, where more so that this isn't the first time he's been thrust in this situation. When Kevin McHale was fired in Houston, he was the interim head coach. And then when David Fizdale was let go in Memphis, he was put in the same position. But he's like, I've learned a lot. He's like, I've been around Kevin McHale. Like, he's like, I've been around him my entire life. And Fizdale taught me a lot of valuable things. He's like, I have experience. And he's like, more or less just saying like, yeah, I think I'm ready to handle this. And then alluded to the fact that his dad, who was a former head coach as well, can give him advice. And he said, like, the first thing his dad said, he's like, all right, well, what's your plan? Like, didn't really, like, was playing hardball with him, but like try to like just get him ready for this situation. Something interesting that Kevin Love did note though is like he has familiarity with JB. That's like he said, I think years off the top of my head, like he's been around JB like the better part of his life. So I guess there's like some comfort level with the arguably the team's best or second best player, depending on how you peg Andre Drummond, and the head coach, at least for the foreseeable future. And if Kevin doesn't get moved this summer, or at least for the remainder of this season, like it seems like going forward that everyone on the team just knows that like this sucks, that the head coach doesn't want to do this anymore and he stepped down. But you kind of have to make chicken salad out of chicken shit in this situation and just move forward. And then you really can't gauge us on wins, but just more so like progression of the young guys. And maybe like something you and I have been preaching for is like you can kind of get the vibe that like they're trying to just build that quote unquote culture, which maybe leads to like normalcy and balance, which is something you and I have been preaching for God knows how long at this point. But
a very, very long
that's just kind of like what's, yeah, that's what kind of stuck out with me with JB. It was kind of like canned answers. I was a little taken surprised. He was pretty open to the fact that like he wasn't expecting this. Like he said, this was Cleveland's contingency plan. That, I mean, I know Beilein was technically under contract for 5 years with the team, but if you want to be realistic here, he would have been in his early 70s by the time that contract completed. So there's a good chance he could have retired before that or got fired or stepped away. Like this exact scenario could have happened a few years after the fact, but I think JB will be ready for the task. I think he did mention that not having the interim tag certainly takes off a lot of pressure on him, or the fact that like he's like, I don't have to be, he's like not necessarily coaching for his life, but you know what I mean? It's like a guy who's like on a 10-day deal and they're trying to make the like make sure they make the absolute most out of these whole situations so that they can stick around long term. He's like, I kind of have a little bit of breathing room a little bit just to like kind of figure things out. And he's just like, we're still kind of learning. We're still trying to figure things out coaching staff wise. Like Lindsey Gottlieb is now part of the front bench and he's like, everyone's just kind of taking a step up at this point in terms of personnel and like everything else. So I would assume that like Dan Giroux is the now JB Bickerstaff's right hand man. And then,
or Antonio Lang might Lindsey be that right. Antonio Lang might have that considering was kind of, this will be interesting to see how it plays out and who he kind of trusts in these situations.
Yeah, no, it'll definitely be interesting. I kind of joked with it earlier with somebody. I said, like, wouldn't it be funny if David Fizdale gets brought in as a consultant? But, I mean, that's honestly a realistic thing, too. I don't know what Fiz is doing right now, but I know him and JB do have a good working relationship. And, I mean, it just wouldn't surprise me. But I guess if it's any reassurance, while we were waiting for the players and we as in the media, while we were waiting for either one of the players, which ended up being Kevin Love, or JB to come over and talk with us. JB was working one-on-one with Kevin Porter, and then he spent like a solid 5-ish, 10 minutes. Like, I don't know. We walked in the middle of it, so I couldn't quantify the exact amount. But then he went over and started working with Darius Garland and Colin Sexton, and then was chatting it up with Dylan Windler and making sure like he was like walking him through certain things. Like, so he's embracing this role and taking it head-on, full steam. Like, he's not just kind of sitting back and watching. Like, last time I was at a Cavs practice when John Beilein was running the show, John Beilein was kind of like just standing in the middle surveying things while assistants were working, but JB was in the middle of it getting just one, which is nice to see. I'm not saying John Beilein wasn't involved with this team at all. He was the head coach, and from all accounts that we've read, like he wanted a lot of autonomy with this roster, so I'm sure he had his fingerprints all over things. But
yeah, and he had the thing, I remember in training camp, where like everyone was divided into colors. You know, like everyone, I think everyone's like, there's like a green group, a white, like a wine group, and a, like a, I don't remember the colors, but like there's people divided up, and then like they would rotate through the different coaches where he, and he's sort of designing everything. So, like, and it's, and it seems like that's probably, that feels like more of a college thing. That's something I know, like, Ohio University did when I was there, that when I was covering college basketball there. And I feel like that's, they, it's one game, but it's just like, that's probably not going to be, that's probably not going to be what Bickerstaff is going to do.
No, I think Bickerstaff will take a lot more of a professional approach. I guess, again, I know a lot of people aren't too thrilled with JB just because of his record and the fact that, like, his time in Memphis has definitely left a sour taste in a lot of Grizzly fans and people who covers the team's mouths. And but I do say this, it could be a lot worse. You could have a completely inexperienced assistant taking over for Bayline, and like this just goes from bad to worse. I mean, hope JB just kind of brings a little bit of stability to the fact that he does have experience and he does have command and respect in this locker room. So I'm hoping for the best. I know I said hoping for the best, but expecting the worst last night. So I'm just going to hope for the best and not have any expectations right now. There's a lot that could happen in 28 games, but it's a pretty brutal stretch, so I don't expect a lot of winning, but I'm just kind of hoping that this is like the Cavs putting together the foundation pieces and the building blocks to just build upon something for next year, where hopefully it's part 2B of the rebuild instead of 1C, to coin what our guy Spencer has said about this whole situation in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's wins and lessons the rest of the year, I think. It's not wins and losses, it's wins and lessons if you want to viewed from that way, and you're hoping that, you know, the, I think what the, you're hoping is that that there are, this is the low, there are no more like severe low points that like we've seen to date so far this season. So what is up next from Evan and I is going to be the last half of our award show. We'll be back ahead of Friday's game and Saturday's game. We'll maybe preview those. Maybe we'll see kind of what the plan is going to be there, but this is just kind of your lead into the show, recapping what was said today. And then you're, but now you're going to hear the second half of our All-Star Awards post, some of the bigger awards among that. Again, go back and listen to part one if you haven't already. But we want to make sure you guys actually got that, considering they got delayed because of everything that has happened. But that's coming up next here on Locked On Cavs. Evan, any final thoughts as we kind of wrap up and transition into the stuff we already did?
It's funny you mentioned the award show, because I just wanted to take the time real quick to like thank everybody for listening in. I took a quick peek at like Chris and I's numbers for the show over the last 30 days, and I was a little floored with how well the show is doing, and it means a lot to me, and I'm sure it means a lot to Chris as well, that you guys tune in every weekday to listen to us, and sometimes on the weekends when the Cavs have to play, man. No, it's just super cool, and I just really appreciate it. And I'm sure it doesn't sound like it because I'm just a genuinely monotone person, but it really does mean a lot that you guys, with the work that Chris and I are putting in, like you guys are actually tuning in and listening. And the award show is one of our best listened to episodes this month so far. So hopefully you guys like the second half of it.
Yeah, I hope you guys do. We had a lot of fun doing it. Everything that has happened has made me delay the post of the actual winner. So I'm actually going to post that up on Thursday. That'll actually be up, but it needed to let that. So it'll also have a new draft board from Trevor Magnotti going up on Thursday. If you want to start thinking about the draft, which I would recommend doing, we'll maybe cover that kind of stuff in the coming weeks, but check all of it out. Check out what Evan's doing at Forbes. He's been cranking out stuff there on the Cavs this month. And it's been a busy, but you know, fun time to be thinking and talking about the Cavs, even though it's a little chaotic a lot of the time. But up now, our award show. So thanks for listening. Enjoy this bit of a longer episode of Locked On Cavs. It's just kind of necessary for where we're at right now, and we will talk to you again tomorrow. Okay, we are back here in the award season, kind of diving through everything. Evan, let's go to these. I think these are some are going to be the most fun awards. We did some of the sillier ones last time. Let's do some of the fun ones. Let's start with Outstanding Young Player. The candidates are Colin Sexton, Darius Garland, Kevin Porter Jr., and Dean Wade. Dean Wade just kind of fills the minimum four rule I set for myself like, here.
He's like an honorable mention.
Yeah. But doing good stuff in Canton. I'm interested in Dean Wade, which is more than, I think that's a good thing, at least for a two-way deal, better than some of the guys they've had in years past. But Evan, I'll let you take the floor on this one first. I think the winner here is obvious, and we have the same one.
Oh yeah, it's by and far Kevin Porter Jr. I had zero expectations for him coming into this season. It all started with Sizegate, and shout out to the Chase Downs Justin Rowan, where he became a big advocate that Kevin Porter is 6'6 or taller, just because he was staying next to Larry Nance. We found out Larry Nance is just shorter than he actually was originally listed. But no, Kevin Porter has just, it's been a lot of fun to watch him grow and develop throughout this season, and I don't really know where his ceiling is at. I was talking to Carter Rodriguez about this today, actually, where it's kind of hard to put your finger on exactly what exactly Kevin Porter's ceiling is going forward. Like, he, Justin would like to say it's Jimmy Butler. Carter said maybe his absolute ceiling is DeMar DeRozan, and, you know, it's just like, I don't know. I love just like watching him play throughout the season, and every time he's been exposed to minutes and everything, or given exposure, it started with playmaking, was a pleasant surprise, and then defense, and then the fact that he is a slasher that we already knew about, but he's a lot more advanced than we realized, and the fact that he's starting to look more comfortable as a 3-point shooter, and like that's starting to grow and develop, and it's turning into a bit of a snowball effect where, like, I have been on the record saying that he should join Cleveland's starting lineup, and if it's not now, it's going to be next season. But no, Kevin Porter by and far has been Cleveland's best young player. I mean, you can make a case for Colin Sexton because he's leading the team in scoring, but what about you? What is we both agree on this, so what is your reasoning on Kevin Porter?
It's Kevin Porter Jr. He's exceeded any expectations that we could have had for him. Maybe there's another award that Colin comes up in, which we'll talk about, that I think also kind of made this easier for me to just give it to KPJ. I think about just what he's done and the improvement he's shown and just the how much fun he's been. I think when you're looking at, if you're looking at evaluating teams and you're looking at just kind of having fun with this to some degree, you want to see guys be unexpectedly interesting, do some unexpected stuff, do really fun stuff. What KPJ has done and what KPJ has really done to kind of stay on top of his stuff and stay and come back well after that injury and look good on defense and make and kind of be improved as a catch and shoot guy and all this stuff. Like, some of his numbers are still not like good, but the tape on him and some of the stuff he's doing, it just makes you think like this is a 19-year-old who is rapidly improving in front of us, has gotten way more comfortable than, like, I think you could certainly make a very clear argument that he's more comfortable at the professional level in basketball now than like Darius Garland is. Mm-hmm. I think he just looks more comfortable on a game to game basis. He's carved out a niche, and I think for what he, the pick he is, everything about him, he's just exceeded any expectations you could have. Like, again, I've mentioned this before, but I do possible outcomes for every guy when I'm thinking about the year at the beginning of the year. One of my outcomes for him was like, he has to spend 2 weeks in the G League or something like that to just get some reps in because he's not cracking the rotation. You know, maybe it's an unanswerable question to know if like Dylan Windler's injury kind of opened up a path for him, or that might not have been there otherwise. But he's been really good. He's gotten better all year. And again, responded after missing 10 games and like has just really been more interesting since. There's very little that I think to nitpick with KPJ right now, considering he's 19. Like, there was some tweets going around of like people saying like it's nuts that he's being used like Damian Lillard. Like, the context on that is like, this is a bad team. You might as well just try stuff and see what your 19-year-old can do. Like, empower that player. That's more interesting than like force feeding shots to Delly or something like that. Like, come on. Like, Don't be like, this is a very different situation than most every other team is sort of in right now. And he's, again, to me, he's passed every test with flying colors.
Yeah, no, I think you said it perfectly, and I don't think I can say it any better. Like, if you're people are criticizing the way the Cavs are utilizing him, they can kick rocks because, like you said, they should empower their young players to feel comfortable at the NBA level. And just the other point you made as well, we probably wouldn't even get this if Dylan Miller is fully healthy, because those two would be vying for minutes in the rotation. And I think Kevin Porter would be the odd man out then, which I'm kind of, it definitely sucks that we didn't get to see Dylan Windler this year, because you and I both have talked about this a few times, that we wish we could see the complete product for Cleveland's young core with their veterans sprinkled in. And Dylan Windler is a big part of that, because the franchise holds him in such a high regard, to the point even where the thought process for Jason Lloyd is that Windler would be starting at the two or even the three. You could flip him or Jetty with Garland as the team's point guard. And because of that, it's just kind of halted that. But at the same time, I guess getting Kevin Porter to rise from the ashes of that potential lineup change is a pretty awesome surprise, and I'm very happy with where it's going, and I'm excited to see where it takes us next year, because I worry about sophomore walls for players, and I think he'll probably have some bumps, obviously. Like you've pointed out, there are some flaws to his game still, but by and far, he has been more ready than I thought he would be, and he's by far Cleveland's best value contract, if you want to throw that in there as well, if you want to get Forbesy with it for what they got him at 30th overall. So
yeah.
I feel really good about that call, because in the preseason previews, I said he was their best value contract, and a few people raised eyebrows at that. I'm like, no, he's going to be legitimately good considering they got him at 30th overall.
Yeah, 100% agree. Last thing on KBJ as we wrap up this first segment, is there a thing for him you'd particularly want to see him build on in the last 30-ish games of the season, whatever it is? Is there something in his game you're kind of going to be paying most attention to the rest of the way?
I'm just going to see his possible defensive growth and the fact that maybe he's getting more. Because, I mean, like, he's a rookie and he's Cleveland's best perimeter defender, but Cleveland still has a pretty bad perimeter defense. So if he can keep sharpening that and honing in on that, like, that'd be great, especially for a rookie to be focused on that. And then the fact that you and I touched on this back when they played the Pelicans, he hit that step back 3-pointer against Jrue Holiday with such confidence. If he continues to have confidence and builds confidence in his outside shot, like, even if it's not the prettiest release right now, at least he has the confidence that it's going in, so that Cleveland maybe doesn't have to completely break that down and like try to fix his release through the summer and through just further player development. So I just want to have him keep building a strong foundation, a strong base, so that can lead into a very successful NBA career. What about you?
With our Kevin? I think it's that, and I think it's the catch and shooting. I think that's going to just be such a key part for him going forward, you know, especially as the Cavs like start getting a little bit better, start kind of figuring out things, what they're doing, what they can do better. And just thinking about it in that kind of context, I wonder if there's a way for them to kind of, if he becomes a starter, if he doesn't, like whatever it is, I wonder what with him would could change with that. And I'm going to pull it up now just to give you an idea of where he's at. But last time I checked it, like wasn't something he was doing great at. I don't remember things well, but so on pull up three pointers, which he's taking 1.2 a game. He's shooting 21.2%. And on catch and shoot three pointers, which he's taking 1.6 a game, he's shooting 46.2%. So I want to see if how sustainable that holds. If that split is kind of what his shot is going to be like. And that would make sense to me if it is that to some degree. But we'll see if that's the case. Okay, yeah. We're going to take a break here and then come back to touch on some other awards. So stay tuned for more Locked On Cavs. Hey, Evan and I are back here. The next award we are going to get into is best player in a supporting role. The candidates are Colin Sexton, Larry Nance Jr., Jetty Osmond, Darius Garland. I would probably throw a KPJ in there as like a fifth nominee, but like the last category, we had the same winner. Evan, It's Colin Sexton, and I think this was a pretty easy choice.
Yeah, no, it was. I'm reading a little bit of your notes, the write-up. Like you put it very well. Sexton can be infuriating at times, and he's divisive to some, and what we actually expect from him going forward isn't actually clear, but at this point, the Cavs aren't at that crossroads. They're still trying to find their way onto the actual road to lead to the crossroads in this rebuild, and Colin Sexton is the team's leading scorer. He may not be the team's best player. I would go to war with the fact that it's either Tristan Thompson most nights, or it's Kevin Love just for his overall play style and the fact that he is an all-star caliber player, or you can even make a case for Andre Drummond right now, because it's still kind of weird to say that Andre Drummond is a Cavalier. I'm still kind of getting used to that, but no, Sexton has been Cleveland's leading scorer. He's super frustrating sometimes to watch where he doesn't move the ball, but I've started to come around on that, and I think people hopefully notice I softened my grump stance because people like to point out that like I'm pretty harsh on him. But like there are some nights where he'll score 25 points, but he'll have maybe one assist or zero assist and a couple turnovers, and there's like a lot of those tunnel vision plays that he always is known for, but I'm okay with an aggressive Colin Sexton when the Cavs are kind of playing. We're going through these rough patches where they weren't really playing winning basketball across the board, but you had one guy who still cared, and I'd rather have a guy out there who is still going to play his ass off, win or lose, and that's just been a lot of fun to watch with Colin. But yeah, no, he's Justin Rowan kind of elaborated. I shouted him out the other night when we recorded, we were talking about it, but Darius Garland is more than likely Cleveland's point guard of the future. He can initiate and set up the offensive sets and everything for Cleveland. Sexton can't do that, but if you remove that scoring punch from the starting lineup, it kind of ruins the flow of things if you're already throwing Andre Drummond into this wrinkle as well. So, yeah, he's divisive, and like I said, the Cavs aren't even close to that crossroads in deciding what his exact role should be. But he's been by and far Cleveland's third, fourth best player, depending on who you ask.
I think he's just like a very deserving rising star. I think he is better than I have been willing to give him credit for it sometimes. Sometimes I think like just the way he's improved, the way he's kind of, taken some strides as a defender, as a passer the last couple weeks. And I think really like if you look at his December when he just his 3-point shot absolutely like fell off a cliff, and then he came back in January and was like shooting it better than he ever has, arguably, like that's really, really good stuff from Colin Sexton. The guy is just wired to work. There's a lot to really, really like about him, and I think that gets lost sometimes in how frustrating he is. And how he can be. I think some of that is like tainted by what, you know, we think of Kevin Love as sort of the guy on the team, but you know, that doesn't always play out that way, and how it goes. But like, again, this is a guy that is leading the team in scoring. He shot 11.1% on 3-pointers in January, and then he came back from not only shooting under 2 a game in December to shooting almost 5 a game in January, but he made them at a 44.6% clip. That's like a crazy variance. He's just been really good in ways that I don't think to my fault I have not acknowledged enough. He's a really interesting, if not perfect, piece for the Cavs, and you're gonna have that in I think a rebuild. When you're doing what the Cavs are trying to do and kind of retool and kind of figure out what is next for your franchise, you are gonna have stuff like this happen and have players like this as sort of part of your groupings and stuff. And then when that happens, you know, like you just have to kind of figure out to make it work and move on at the right times and everything. And that's the trickiest part. But like, I would rather, like, if you look at let's just look back at the 2018 draft real quick.
Okay.
The Cavs had the 8th overall pick. You know, I do believe the stuff with Shea and them not taking him is true. Here are the next couple picks. Kevin Knox at 9, Mikal Bridges, then Shea, then Miles Bridges, Jerome Robinson, Michael Porter Jr., Troy Brown, Zaire Smith, Dante DiVincenzo, Lonnie Walker, Kevin Herter, Josh Okogie. So I think like the back stuff with Michael Porter kind of makes me a little skeptical of like just overreact, like kind of leaning all the way in on him as who should have been the guy. People know our takes on Shea at this point, but like I would rather have Colin right now, I think, then, you know, Miles and Kevin, yeah, and all those guys. Like, I think I would prefer Colin to those guys. Like, I could see the argument for some of the other guys, but, and, you know, some of the advanced numbers don't love Colin, whatever. Colin's good. And I think 8th pick, considering everything, like, they could have done a lot worse. And I think he's better than I think we acknowledge, at least I acknowledge sometimes.
Yeah, no, I agree with you in that regard. And if you had to pull a player, the lowest I'll go is like the end of the lottery, which I believe was Michael Porter. You could make a case for him, and I know there's a lot of Cavs fans out there who still poo-poo the Sexton pick and say Michael Porter should have been the choice. And like, yeah, he's been playing really well in bursts for Denver, but like you said, that back injury is legitimately concerning, and there's a reason why he fell from arguably like he was considered a top pick heading into that draft class before he got hurt at Missouri, and then like his stock fell, and thankfully he landed in a good situation in Denver where there's a lot less pressure. But if you put him in Sexton's situation at 8th overall, like you expect him to produce immediately, it's going to be a lot more disappointing of a production because you don't get him for his rookie season. So this season is his rookie season, and that's just disappointing overall. But then if you keep just working your way up the list, Jerome Robinson hasn't done anything for the Clippers. I think that was a huge miss on their part. Miles Bridges is for the Hornets. Like, he made rising stars, if I remember correctly off the top of my head this year, but a little bit of perplexing. Shea is probably the better player than Colin, but like you and I have both touched on a million times at this point, he told the Cavs not to draft him, so you if he doesn't want to be here, he can make a huge stink and get his way out of here. So that's probably not going to happen. And then you have Mikal Bridges, who's a solid enough player, but doesn't move the needle enough for me. And then right below Colin is Kevin Knox, who the Cavs worked out, but he's statistically by and far the worst player in the NBA this year. And it's for the best Cleveland didn't draft him, because I think he would be even. If we flip this, I'm sure Knicks fans would be griping about Colin Sexton as well, but they do need a point guard at this point because they can't figure it out, even though they have a couple nice options at guard. But if Cleveland fans and like the Cavs draft went with Kevin Knox at 8, I think you and I would be genuinely more frustrated watching him produce out there instead of Colin Sexton. So if you put that context with the rest of the people he was drafted by, and Wendell Carter Jr. just getting drafted by Chicago, still breaks my heart because I wanted him in Cleveland so bad that summer. But It kind of worked out. I mean, all things considered, if you look at just through the rest of the lottery, Shea being the best player, but telling Cleveland not to draft him, I think drafting Colin and the fact that he likes it here and the coaching staff likes him and the organization likes him, and like you and I pointed out, they make a concerted effort to kind of pump him up a lot too. I think it couldn't have worked out any better, and hopefully just, you know, he is a long-term piece, whether it's off the bench or in the starting unit.
Yeah, we'll do one more award here in this segment because we'll do the big one last, team MVP last. Well, we actually have three awards left. So we're going to kind of combine. We're going to do this one real quick, and then we'll do two in the last one. Best highlight, the Kevin Love outlet pass to Jetty versus the Thunder. Love playing really good defense, scrambling to get the loose ball, then getting it to Jetty, and then Jetty throwing a oop to Kevin Porter Jr. Love hitting Sexton on a cut for a dunk against the Bulls. Nance recovering to block a new Google layup. If you know who No Google is, you know. Tristan Thompson makes his first career three-pointer. And then the one I added after we kind of set this up, Andre Drummond for Wednesday, threading the needle to Darius Garland, who then threw up a really nice lob to Larry Nance Jr. My winner, because I am a coward who changes things, is Andre Drummond's pass the other night.
No, I'm a coward too. I think that's
that play just really did it for me, man. I don't know.
It was fun.
It was really fun. Just really, really fun.
I think it was a good palate cleanser after how bad that Clippers game was, just to kind of see the Cavs offense in full motion there. And like, they looked really I think it was in the first half, which I was just like, wow, Cleveland looks really sharp. And then took their foot off the gas, but let's not complain too much here. But no, that was a really fun play. And I agree. I think that was the best play so far in this season for the Cavs, and there's not a lot to pick from here, but I mean, you listed a few, but like that was by and far like the most fun I had watching the Cavs for an offensive sequence.
Yeah, the Love one was like a very close second for me. The Tristan three in itself was just like really, really good.
Tristan, I think, making threes and continuing to make
that whole thing is just really, really fun. Yeah, and I want to highlight this just because we're not going to talk about Garland really at all on this podcast, which is maybe a discussion we should have next week about what his season's been so far and what we kind of think of it. Because we haven't talked about him, I think, enough, considering where they draft him and everything like that. The lob he threw at the end of that was just really, really good. And he's come a long way as a lob thrower. Mm-hmm. And he threw that like on the move. Like, he was still going pretty close to full speed when he threw that lob. That's hard to do. He's got his touch is underrated as a passer. And I think that if he doesn't throw that pass like how he did it, that's like the Cavs are ending up on Shaqton. Like they're that's gonna end up as a really bad highlight for them.
Yeah, no, that would have been a tragic Bronson, I think, is what Shaq calls it. But we have not really touched on Garland much in this, since he's kind of had a quiet rookie season. It's just been really up and down for the most part. He's looked composed and comfortable as a guard. And like you and I have both kind of stressed throughout my time ever since joining the show, is he's looked composed as a guard, but there's nice little things you see that he can build upon that could hopefully build into a long-term successful lead guard for the Cavs. And that lob pass, like you said, it was in full motion, like full speed, everything else. Like it was just a well orchestrated pass, and like it's just little things like that you're saying like, okay, maybe this kid does have something that kind of quiets a lot of the concerns you have when you see him on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, that's 100% correct. Okay, one last break and we'll be back with more Locked On Cavs. Evan, we're back. Last two things here, last two categories. Number one here we have is the best single game performance. Mm-hmm. The nominees are Colin Sexton scoring 31 against the Knicks, Tristan Thompson scoring 35 against the Pistons, Dante Exum scoring 28 against the Wolves, Kevin Porter Jr. scoring 24 against the Rockets, and then Kevin Love's 30 and 17 night against the Spurs. I tried to limit this to one per guy, so if there was like other Kevin games, other Colin games, whatever that should have, you thought should have been in here, just consider like the this player kind of getting that award for maybe all their best performances. It's sort of like in the Oscars, like Margot Robbie should have been nominated for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but got nominated for Bombshell, but at least she got nominated. That's like the way I'm viewing this. Who's your winner here?
I went with the KPJ's 24 points against the Rockets because it was kind of like the moment where it solidified things for me, saying that I was still a little skeptical of Kevin Porter first. I'm like, I'm seeing like, yeah, that's nice, but he's still a rookie and eventually he'll come back down to earth. But like, that's the moment where I finally joined the hive and I'm like, all right, let's ride this train right off the rails, off the bridge into the valley. Like, I'm going down with the ship, because Kevin, that's when it kind of cemented the moment for me that Kevin Porter is Cleveland's best rookie. And you can kind of see how much potential there actually is with him and why Cleveland's front office reportedly viewed him as a top 10 prospect. And again, like I said before, is their best value contract considering they got him at 30th overall. Chris, what about you? What was your favorite single game performance this year?
It's Tristan Thompson's 35. That game was just Tristan going toe to toe with Drummond, being incredibly physical, putting up monster numbers. He was there. He threw down like so many just crushing lobs in that one. You know, this was a game where Kevin didn't play all that well. Kevin Love did not have a particularly strong performance in that one. Tristan sets a career high in scoring in this game. It's one of the last times he's considering, we just sort of assume at this point that this is his last year with the Cavs. This is going to go down as just kind of one of his best performances in a vacuum ever as a Cavalier. And that's just really, really cool to see. You know, again, this on the road, did this, as the engine of the team, picking up one of their few wins on the season. Considering the next award and considering who I have winning that award, I just felt like he also deserved this. KPJ's was good. The Love Spurs game is probably a little underrated in my book. If they would have won the game, I think Kevin's performance against the Knicks last week might have actually won for him, because I could not remember him being so dialed in on defense at any point this year as he was in that game. It feels weird to not, like, the Colin game was really good and everything. It's just something, Tristan just feels like the defining leader of this Cavs group. I don't think he'll go down as the defining player, because I think that we'll need some context and years away from this game to kind of perfectly know that. But I do think that performance was just as good as I've maybe seen Tristan ever play, and I love that.
Yeah, no, it was I'm looking at the box score now, like, that was one of the Cleveland, that was a big win, and I think you and I both, that now I remember the full context of it, because I was like, wow, that was a really good win for the Cavs, and it's going to be nice when they go into Denver and they get their butts kicked, and it was a good follow-up to that. But no, Tristan was a man on a mission in that game, and Love had 17 points and 9 rebounds and 3 assists, and just kind of weird over game overall for the Cavs, where the meaningful bench guys were Matthew Dellavedova, Brandon Knight, Ante Zizek, and Alphonso McKinney. And I mean, the supporting cast for Thompson, with Garland having 20 and 7 and Sexton having 19 and 6 rebounds and 2 steals, was also really nice. But no, Tristan was just tearing the Pistons apart and kind of taking his new teammate Andre Drummond to task, who did finish the night with 28 points and 23 rebounds. Good God, that's a lot. But no, that was just a good moment. And like you said, this is likely his last year in Cleveland. Either he's leaving in free agency or being sent out via sign and trade. So this is just a nice moment to have, to maybe just kind of leave as a nice closing moment in his life as a Cavalier, because he has been here since 2011, which is weird to think. But this was just a solid performance overall. But I just still think that Kevin Porter game was so much more fun to watch, and it kind of pushed me over the edge where I'm like, I was kind of down on this rookie group to begin with that the Cavs had this summer. And I'm like, okay, well, the Cavs actually have something special here with Kevin Porter.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's 100% fair. I think all of these are really good. Even the Exum game was just like probably part of the reason why I would like to see him still play more now. That's just the reality of kind of where I'm at with him. Okay, big award. Sorry, go ahead.
Doesn't that feel so long ago?
Feels like 9 years ago. But like the Tristan, the Denver game feels like 7 months ago. You know, like all of this feels like very far away from me. That could just be because I don't sleep enough.
That's fair.
Anyway, I'll ask my therapist. Anyway, team MVP. Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, Colin Sexton, Larry Nance Jr. are the candidates. The winner is Tristan Thompson. This was a very easy answer for me.
Yeah, no, it was for me too. He is, I mean, advanced numbers and everything else, like you have noted here, don't really favor Tristan. He is also, you know, kind of a dinosaur in the fact that he's more of a traditional center that doesn't work in today's modern NBA, but he's the heart and soul of this Cavs, and I don't want to think of where Cleveland would be at the beginning of the year, and maybe even post-deadline right now, because he's still trying to be the good team locker room guy and not trying to tear things down because he's coming off the bench now, and he's just been a positive presence for these young rookies and young guards and rookies, and just I think that's invaluable for what the Cavs are looking for right now, especially the guy who is arguably the top offensive rebounder in the league, and he could still be playing meaningful minutes for a playoff contender, but he, by all accounts, wants to be here at least to see this see his contract till the end. So, yeah, no, kudos to Tristan. Like, maybe he's not an all-star player, but he's an all-star to most Cleveland fans and people who cover this team.
My reasoning for this really goes from, I think, the impact and just kind of what he's meant to the organization as a whole this year. You know, Kevin, I think, is the best player on the team. I think Colin has had probably some higher highs than Tristan to some degree. You know, I think Nance has, again, probably been a little underrated. You know, KPJ is, I think, the darling of Cavs Twitter. You know, I think all these things can really be true. Sexton, you know, also is a guy that kind of makes the team go. Like, he can be the engine, you know, and kind of make the team just kind of move at a much higher pace than maybe they even should, but he's the one kind of making that happen. That counts for something. But when I think of this team and I think of what separates it from last year and I think of what sort of is working about it, I think it all kind of does come from Tristan to some degree. You know, he's always playing hard and focused almost every time he's on the court. There's some defensive stuff with him that at times, like, you can just see he's maybe not going like 100%, but like he's closer than like Kevin is to that. He's leading while he's on there. He's kind of the guy keeping guys in the right position, kind of, at least publicly, and I think in the locker room from everyone I've talked to, kind of keeping everyone competing, trying to establish, you know, a positive competitive culture and kind of making sure everything is kind of flowing together and whatnot. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone in the Cavs that is frustrated with Tristan, that has a negative thing to say about Tristan and what he's provided to this team. You know, he backed John Beilein when the Knives came out for Beilein. Knives out, too. Who killed John Beilein? That's my movie pitch. Bring it back.
I like Knives Out, too, to done it, but...
That's good. My other one was just like, I don't know if you saw that meme of like the share of the last four celebrity photos, but mine was just like four guys who all just like probably are looking for a loose cigarette. It was like RIP Mac Miller, Elijah Wood smoking a cigarette on a scooter. Anyway, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that to the listeners. Sorry, guys. I just think Tristan, he's averaging career high. Like, the fact that he's averaging career highs in points and rebounds is amazing. It's amazing that he's like, again, he was like washed like 3 years ago.
I think part of that was fatigue, though, and just, you know, those Iron Man minutes catching up with him. So,
yeah, and having all that time off
last year helped.
He's playing really, really well, playing as well as I've seen him play in a long time. I love it. I think he's just been kind of the leader in so many different ways. And it would have been way, way worse without him. Like, I think it would have been way worse without other guys on the team, but I think just the culture, the vibe, everything, it just, without Tristan, I don't know exactly where things are at. And to me, he's the clear MVP.
No, I'd agree with that. And Chris, I'm really disappointed in you. And then in his eighth season, Tristan Thompson has now added a three-point shot to his game. And he's become a reliable three-point shooter. And he told Angel Gray last night, and we're recording this the day after the Hawks game, just to, you know, give a little people the behind-the-scenes stuff here, that he has been working in practice to add a three-point shot in his game. And that's the most impressive thing of all, because he's a better three-point shooter than Ben Simmons. And everyone talks about how good Ben Simmons is when the Cavs have truly an elite player just sitting here. And I'm surprised no team took a gamble on him at the trade deadline.
Is that Kyle Korver? Is that Kyle Korver back with the Cavs? Oh, no. Wow. Tristan Thompson. Wow.
Marksman. I mean, The release is ugly as all hell, but...
Oh, it's terrible. He's, like, jumping into it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It doesn't look natural at all, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it, baby. That's what I say.
Yeah, and it's...
I didn't mean to be there, man, but it's just... I love it. I just... Tristan is... I think... this is probably this is likely Kevin Love's last season, and he and Tristan are the last two meaningful contributors to that championship team. I mean, you could
I think Dele mattered to that team. Yeah,
Dele does too, but Dele is also kind of a corpse of what he used to be. Like, he bums me out every time he goes out there, but Kevin by and far, I keep saying by and far, but whatever, has been frustrating and a bit of a bummer just because this is kind of burning down. It was burning down in spectacular fashion for a while, but like Tristan's just kind of making the most of a very crappy situation and making it fun for all of us. So when his time in Cleveland comes to a close, he will be obviously the team's MVP by the time the season's over. And also, like, there's a lot of just fun memories in this last season with him that I'll carry with me. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Tristan Thompson was just a lot of fun his entire time in Cleveland.
Yeah, this has been the year of, I think, Tristan Thompson to some degree, and that's why he's our team MVP at this point of the year. We'll see if that changes by the end of the season. I suspect that it might just because of his – we'll see if his playing time holds up, but right now I think he firmly deserves the award. Okay, Evan, any final thoughts as we get out of here?
Well, this is coming out on Monday, so I hope you guys, everyone who's listening, watch some of those movies, Chris, that I recommended. I'm just kind of looking forward to seeing what happens with these last less than 30. Maybe it's like 28 games off the top of my head just to see what happens. I don't know how much we're going to see of Kevin Love going forward. I know they said it's an Achilles injury that's sidelining him. And if it actually is, it's serious. And if you're looking to trade him, you don't want to risk it. So I'm hoping to see just some nice growth, maybe a refreshed Darius Garland, because he's definitely looked sluggish, like John Boeheim would say, heading up to the All-Star break. So maybe we see a little bit of refreshed Garland. Maybe we see a more juiced up Sexton after he plays in Rising Stars. And then hopefully it's just some fun basketball. Like, we both agreed like last second that Drummond to Garland to Nance sequence was one of the most fun plays of the season. Like, we just see more of that with the remainder of this year. So just so I can have some fun watching a team bottom out and play for ping pong balls in the draft lottery this summer. What about you, buddy?
Yeah, you know, I think everything we've touched on these last two episodes is kind of the indicator of what has worked for me and what hasn't worked for me this year. I think one of the things I want to do after the break is kind of I want to get back to writing a little more. Just managing my time better is kind of essential to that. So we'll see if I can hold up, you know, fingers crossed there. But, you know, I think that this has been a very interesting year. It's been much more enjoyable to cover than last year. There's certainly times where Evan and I are like, oh, my God, like I don't have 20 minutes of stuff to talk about from this meaningless game. But it's been fun. You know, I think it's been more fun than last year. And I'm excited to kind of continue with it the rest of the year. And again, we're recording this before the All-Star weekend. And there'll be a stinger on top of this that I record kind of after Colin does everything, but I hope he really enjoys that. I hope that, you know, I think about where we are now covering this team, and I think about where the team could be by 2022 when the All-Star game is in Cleveland. I will probably reflect a lot on this season when I think about that for whatever reason. I can't tell you exactly why that's the case, but I think I will reflect on this season and then compare it to where they are then. And kind of see how things have changed and how they haven't.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way to look at things. It's just Cleveland's still just a weirdly constructed roster where they still have meaningful pieces from that championship team and just like a lot of clunky veterans that don't fit and a lot of young guys who need minutes and they're not 100% ready to bottom out. So maybe this is like I talked about how they're still trying to find that direction to reach the crossroads. Maybe this is this last half of the season is them trying to head in that direction, and then through the draft and then through whatever happens this summer in free agency, if the Cavs do have cap space, if Drummond doesn't accept his player option, it's just going to be an interesting time to see kind of where things are at. But it's been a weird year, and I'm kind of ready for it to stop being weird, and just I want to just have a normal time watching this team, and I don't think I ever will, but I'll just keep wishing it until the day I die.
Yeah, that's fair. Let's get some normalcy. Let's get some kind of more calmness. We'll see how that holds up the rest of the year and into next year. But that's going to be it for this Monday episode of Locked On Cavs. Again, we'll be back tomorrow Figuring out what we'll talk about between when recording this and then will be interesting, but we'll be back. Hope everyone enjoyed All-Star Weekend. Hope you guys enjoyed the full show. If you listen to this one first for some reason, please go back and check out Friday's episode. And check that everything across the Locked On Network. It's a good time right now with this little break to catch up on other teams that you maybe want to pay more attention to, or other players. You know, like the Grizzlies are really fun, and there's a whole bunch of other NBA stuff that you can check out across the whole Locked On Network. So please go do that whenever you get a chance. But for myself, for Evan, this has been Locked On Cavs. Talk to you again.